Welcome to Let's Talk Legal, part of Coastal Daybreak every Tuesday morning and brought to you by Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. You can call in now to have your legal questions answered by attorneys Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Call in now with your questions at 252-247-7282.
And welcome to Let's Talk Legal. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us. What are we talking about today?
Ben, I think that we're going to talk and decipher the elective share statute and some elective share issues in the state of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And right off the cuff, that terminology might be throwing some of our listeners and just knowing what in the world does that mean,
yeah.
Elective share, and what's the context of those two words.
Yeah, where do I vote for that?
Mm-hmm. Basically, this evolves been in the area where, you know, a wife and or husband come into the office, they start talking about the fact that they are, you know, maybe in second marriages, third marriages, mm-hmm. whatever the case might be, or maybe they're even in their career marriage, but one of the spouses has inherited mm-hmm. a very significant amount of resource from her family, mm-hmm. let's say, and they are wanting to make beneficiaries in their estate other than each other.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So in the state of North Carolina, one cannot easily disinherit or modify the inheritance, the expected inheritance of a surviving spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And the spouse in North Carolina has certain statutory rights known as the elective share.
Right. Right.
In the estate of their spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And these elective share rights are quite significant. Let's go through them a minute. If a couple has been married for less than 5 years, then the surviving spouse gets 15% mm-hmm. of what is known as the total net asset. More than 5 years, so mm-hmm. like say 6 years,
right,
which is flies by, okay.
Yeah,
the spouse is at 25%, and then at less than between 10 and 15,
uh-huh.
it is 33.
Right,
between 10 and 15, and then of course at 15 it jumps to 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So if this couple's been married for 10 years
mm-hmm.
In a second marriage, third marriage, then, of course, there's an expected inheritance in their spouse of 33% of the estate, one-third.
Mm.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
And, of course, if it's a career marriage or a marriage that's been going on for, you know, 15 or more years, then, of course, the surviving spouse is entitled to 50% of the net asset value. So,
and that's outside of anything that the will says.
That is the point that mm-hmm. the law controls
mm-hmm.
this percentage, notwithstanding the will.
Okay.
Okay. It trumps the will.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's some details here that we need to discuss, but the law is the law, and the will can say, for instance, the will could say, John could say, I hereby leave, you know, 2/3 of my estate to my two children from my prior marriage.
Mm-hmm.
All of the rest of my estate I leave to my wife. Well, the wife is included in the will,
mm-hmm.
but the question is does all the rest equal the 50% percentage that we just were speaking of with regard to the total net asset value of his estate?
Mm-hmm.
Does it equal the 50%? If it doesn't equal that, we're talking about value now,
mm-hmm.
then, of course, she would be entitled to file for an elective share. And she would be, in effect, receiving the law or the statutory amount as opposed to what is included in the will.
Okay.
Now this is the place of foundation that we're talking about right now, Ben. But that's a pretty good. But Wes, do you have something to add to the foundation before we get into some specifics?
Well, no, not really. I mean, I think that is the foundation.
Yeah.
I think
it's
just based on how long you're married,
mm-hmm.
and generally the law, you know, protects that surviving spouse because there's an interest policy in making sure that the you know, the surviving spouse is taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that really is kind of addressed in really all other aspects of the law too. I mean, it's, you can't be married and keep all the assets in one person's name and then get divorced and still keep everything.
Yeah.
Unless you've got a prenup that deals with that kind of thing or postnup. So, you know, the other situation where that, you know, the marriage ends would be a death.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a safety net for that surviving spouse.
And by definition, in your scenario where he was saying two thirds go to my kids from a previous marriage, that would not be in effect, because if that wife qualified for 50%, that's obviously going to leave some of that two thirds out. So.
That's correct.
Right.
That's
you correct. Have to take care. You have to take into consideration, and this is getting into the details, but you have to take into consideration what the wife, as we say, should have or did receive outside of the will as well, though.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say they had a joint account, then half of that would have been considered hers, but half of the value of that would have been goes on into that 50% equation.
Right,
so
gotcha.
You add that.
Gotcha. So that,
it's not
which
just
is not in the will.
Right, it's not just probate assets, meaning assets passing under the will. Non-probate, too, life insurance, annuities, beneficiary designation type documents.
Mm-hmm.
Gifts within the last year, you know, these type things.
So you got anything that existed outside of the will has to be captured in that.
That's right.
So let's talk about that a minute, because that is one of the first details.
Mm-hmm.
The first detail would be, the question would be, and Wes and I actually are going into the office this morning and are going to be researching a hybrid of this question, which is, what is net asset value? Okay, you talk about these percentages, Wes and Cecil, but percentage of what?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what we need to begin to introduce here this morning, Ben, is that we're not talking about the assets that are in the probate estate. There's life insurance, there's IRAs, there are annuities, there are joint accounts with right of survivorship.
Mm-hmm.
There are certificates of deposit that have right of survivorship. There are all sorts of assets out there that an individual can own that are not necessarily going to pass through this will that said two-thirds to the children, one-third to my wife.
Right.
So we've got to unscramble all of that and begin anew with an inventory of all of the assets of the decedent.
Mm-hmm.
What did he have incidents of ownership in? Did he have incidents of ownership in a life insurance policy, an annuity, an IRA, a bank account? And we need to see where those assets passed.
Mm-hmm.
And they are then included in the as we begin to calculate the asset value that then we take the percentage of. Some of these assets would pass by beneficiary to the spouse. So, in effect, they got them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They're part of that percentage, even though they didn't pass according to the will.
Exactly. Or the decedent might have a business relationship, and there might have been an agreement as to how that would be handled if one of the partners died.
Right. There could be stock.
Right, lots
there
of
could
things.
Be a promissory note. There could be, I mean, the home could be joint. If the home is joint, then half the value of it is considered to have been received by the by the spouse upon death and goes into that equation. So, you know, you've got to have a full understanding as to all of the assets that passed at the time of the death, either by the will or by operation of law, or at any point in time, you know, it could take into consideration gifts that took place within the previous year, not to the spouse, but gifts to others. You know, you can take into consideration.
There's a lot of things. Every case is different, isn't it? Every has its unique aspect.
Right, no doubt. I think the big picture, you know, with regard to this, as we talk about these details, though, is that so many people don't know about this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're most likely in a second marriage type situation, third marriage type situation, and your spouse passes away, and maybe there was a failure to plan. Maybe the estate planning wasn't put in place to take care of you. Maybe you have concerns about where you're now going to live. You know, maybe the home wasn't left to you. You know, these situations happen. Mm-hmm. You just need to know that for a 6 month period of time after the estate is open for your spouse who died, you have a right to claim an elective share.
So 6 months.
6 months, mm-hmm. right. And then, by claiming that elective share, you know, kind of the state of North Carolina has done some planning for you mm-hmm. to make sure you're taken care of. So, you know, if you have questions about any of these type things, the implications of it, you know, kind of pulling the trigger on this elective share mm-hmm. Calculation, then, you know, you certainly need to get with an attorney who deals with these issues on a consistent basis pretty shortly after the death so that we don't, you know, miss the time frame.
Okay.
You know, exercise your rights.
More coming in a moment with Harvey Collins, Attorneys at Law. And if you'd like to join us, 247-7282, you can find a list of past shows, too, at harveyallycollins.com. Welcome back here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins every Tuesday morning here on Coastal Daybreak. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins talking about the elective share.
Yep. So now, Ben, let's move to a few more details because they are certainly out there with regard to this elective share issue. Wes and I think have laid a nice foundation for our listeners to understand basically that, you know, you really can't disinherit your spouse. Mm-hmm. Your spouse in the state of North Carolina has a statutory right to a certain percentage of your estate. And that includes assets that you might have incidents of ownership in, mm-hmm. like life insurance, IRAs, annuities, things of that nature. Your spouse is entitled to a percentage of those. Now, that begs the question, well, the client says, well, what in the world can I do about this?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
I didn't know this. And I don't like this, and you're a lawyer, and I want you to help me figure this out. Because my wife and I, by the way, agreed a long time ago that her assets were going to go to her children, and my assets were going to go to my children. We have always agreed to that. The children understand that. We all agreed that was going to be the rules of the road for our blended family.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you're telling me this. Well, there are a few things that we can do. First of all, yes, absolutely, folks can enter into a prenuptial agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having more and more of this happen, Ben, because of the fact that folks are aware of this elective share statute more so than they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And many, many, you know, geriatric patients, if you will, our elder patients,
mm-hmm.
you know, our lovebirds in their 70s and 80s and 90s are entering into prenuptial agreements,
mm-hmm.
which then, of course, allow the spouse to waive the right to file this elective share.
Right.
That's a pretty simple fix.
Mm-hmm.
The second fix that we can do is there can be negotiated a post-marital agreement.
Mm-hmm.
A post-marital agreement in the state of North Carolina, they are enforceable. There is certainly, though, however, a heightened sense of an element of enforceability.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be clearly independent representation.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, separate, no concern.
Not the same
higher
lawyer.
Level of concern.
Okay. Yeah. There needs to be a full and complete disclosure of assets.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be valid consideration
mm-hmm.
For the contract, because in a prenuptial agreement, historically, the consideration has always been just the marriage. We will get married, but we want this prenup, and so the consideration is the getting married.
Right.
Once you're already married and we're talking about a postnuptial agreement, that's a situation where there needs to be some valid consideration.
Is that typically a situation where the circumstances under the prenuptial agreement are no longer exist? And so maybe the postnuptial is going to be addressing a whole new set of circumstances.
Well, a good prenup is going to go into more than just divorce. I mean, mm-hmm. I've stumbled across, you know, some prenups over the years that have had very limited language in them with regard to rights that that become available upon death,
mm-hmm.
and it really just deals with the issue of divorce. And, you know, and one comes to mind, you know, there was no intent whatsoever with regard to either husband or wife giving the other the right to claim the elective share, mm-hmm. second marriage, very wealthy individuals, so on and so forth. And they thought they had handled all of that. And I happened to look at the prenup that they did and spent a lot of time on years ago. And that prenup, you know, had no language in it with regard to rights that are derived through or as a result of the death. Mm-hmm. You know, they just dealt with the divorce. So in that particular case, you know, both husband and wife wanted to protect what they had, and they wanted to control their assets with their own estate plan, not through a potential elective share claim. So we worked on putting together the postnuptial agreement to, you know, to address that. And, you know, but you don't always have that situation.
Right.
You don't
right.
always have folks who are agreeable to work that out by this contract that would, you know, end the rights to bring that elective share. So, you know, the process as well, I think, is a very important because, you know, typically when you're filing an elective share or when one is filed against an estate that you're dealing with, those are the two parties you're dealing with. Obviously, you got the surviving spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the spouse, the surviving spouse, him or herself, are filing the elective share claim. Sometimes it's kind of through their kids.
Yeah,
you know,
might
even be through a power of attorney.
Right.
And then upon the filing of the elective share claim, then the estate has certain obligations as well. Because mm-hmm. it's kind of hard, you know, for the surviving spouse or the children to calculate what the elective share might be without having information.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he might have some information with regard to, you know, assets and so on and so forth. But in many cases, they don't have a full picture of what passed upon the death or what was available.
That's why you'll
death.
Have discovery in that case.
That's right. So although the statutes kind of limit the discovery process, mm-hmm. You can ask for the discovery process to be expanded into further discovery, but mm-hmm. built into the elective share statute, the estate, within a pretty short period of time of the elective share claim being filed, has to submit what's called a Form 706, which is like an estate tax return, and it shows what assets there would have been to pass, and it deals with assets that are probate, non-probate, so on and mm-hmm. so forth. The idea with regard to that, obviously, is, you know, we just need to have an open book with regard to how to properly calculate this elective share.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, even though there's that process, and even though there is, you know, it's kind of a, as I say, transparency with regard to providing information regarding the elective share, many times you get into little nuances. You get into little issues about how things are to be handled under the law in order to calculate that elective share.
Before we take a break, let me ask you one of those. Say you had done some estate planning and included a trust, and so you were going to have assets put into a trust. Does that affect how your calculation would go?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of moving parts with regard to that. I mean, mm-hmm. assets that are already in a trust. I mean, if the assets are available,
mm-hmm.
You'll say it's a revocable trust that the deceased could have changed. Yeah, that comes right back in. If there's limitations on it relates, as it relates to, the deceased and how he or she could access those funds, then they may not be part of the elective share claim. We've actually got some pretty good cases that have gone up to the Court of Appeals, Supreme mm-hmm. Court, North Carolina on that particular issue. So yeah, I mean, you know, when you're talking about, you know, sometimes six figures, sometimes seven figures mm-hmm. on an elective share claim, believe me, the big guns sometimes come out fighting
yeah,
over these details.
Yeah. All right, more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harbell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. Hey, welcome back to the program. Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins.
So, Ben, we were speaking about tools of the trade, if you will, that might help clients, you know, kind of navigate around this elective share.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about the prenuptial. We talked about a postnuptial agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those are up and running. They're good documents. You know, prenuptials, though sometimes, I don't know, they still have a bit of a stigma attached to them. People don't particularly understand them, or fearful of them. And so we just sometimes just don't see those when we need to see them in this context. So if there is no prenup, then, and there's no real ability to kind of put together a postnup, then the solution to an elective share, quagmire is to place the elective share amount, if you will, into a trust. You mentioned trust earlier. But a grantor, a testator, a gentleman who's in our office can, or lady can certainly dictate that, look, I understand that you have advised me that my spouse can elect a share of my estate, and I am telling you that fine, okay, you get him to elect that, but I want it to go into a trust for him. And I will give him the lifetime right to receive that trust, according to some ascertainable standard. But upon his death, whatever's left in that trust is going to go back to my children.
Okay. Right.
So some people might call this, you know, a life estate trust. I mean, there's no real legal terminology like that, but to think of it
sort
like
has
that
effect.
Kind of has that effect. It gives the surviving spouse the right to the to the elective share amount. Only the elective share amount. The other assets, as we said, after 15 years of marriage is 50%. Remember,
right.
The other 50% could go on to the children. Wes has got something to add here.
So let's contrast this a little bit. So if you have a situation, which we oftentimes have in second, third marriages, and most times it's the husband. The husband says, if I pass away, I want to take care of my wife, but I really don't want all my assets to then end up going to her kids.
Right.
I don't like her kids. I mean, we hear it all the time. So let's say that there's no planning. Well, if there's no planning other than a will, so on and so forth, then the spouse or the kids would have a right to elective share, so they get 50% of the total net assets if the marriage has been 15 years or longer. So it could be husband dies, elective share claim is made, wife dies, I mean, within a day. It could be immediate.
Sure.
Everything goes to her kids, that 50%. That's exactly what he did not want to happen. Let's contrast that with the same thing. I want to take care of my spouse, but I don't want everything to go to the kids, or 50% to go to her kids. That's not what I want to do. So, you know, you leave into a trust for her benefit. It's a specific type of trust, elective share trust, the elective share amount. And then the trustee has the obligation to then make sure she gets income off of it, maybe some principal distributions that she's taken care of. And she might live a day, she might live 20 years.
There you
and
go.
And then upon her death, then it goes to wherever he directed it to go.
All the more reason you want to make sure you get the right advice and you call on the right advice at the right time from Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, online at harvellandcollins.com.